Blog Talk Radio.
Don't think so. And you know what else? I think it's time that I reintroduce Off the Rails Uncensored, because after eye surgery, I'm feeling a little bit, you know, like I need to get some things off my chest. And when is that never the case with me? Guys, could you please hit my music? I said please.
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cost of something I would be.
Today is the very last episode of Off the Rails Uncensored for November. Let me clarify this. When I get fully recovered and I don't have to put in drops in my eye every 15 minutes, I will be telling you, not the woe was me stories, but I will be telling you exactly what is going on in professional wrestling from what I've seen, what I've witnessed. On all levels of professional wrestling, it seems to me that some things are getting to be faction heavy. And this isn't just WWE. Ring of Honor, how is it faction heavy? Couldn't tell you, because the Bullet Club is international, so that doesn't necessarily make Ring of Honor faction heavy when they've got Dalton Castle, when they've got guys like Travis Gordon, and they also have Cheeseburger, and they've got various variety of other men and women, you know, fighting in Ring of Honor. That begs the question, though. Why is wrestling, why is pro wrestling faction heavy? I guess if there weren't really any groups, then you wouldn't have the Four Horsemen, you wouldn't have Fabulous Freebirds, you wouldn't have the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express. I mean, there's lots of things that wrestling wouldn't have without factions. But lately, been noticing, you know, on the main flagship of wrestling, right? The World Wrestling Entertainment is known as the main flagship. On SmackDown Live, what groups are there? There's the New Day. There's the Riot Squad. On Raw, you've got, well, the Shield. You've got the Miztourage. You've got the Bar. And you have another female group that Paige heads, and you have a grand total of how often should I, you know, watch this? Because, well, a grand thought total of, okay, it's entertaining, I'm going to watch it regardless of whether it's faction heavy. So, again, what does the term faction heavy mean? Is there too many groups? How do the writers deal with all these groups? How do they manage them? I'll tell you right now. There are plenty of professionals handling how these groups are, what their promos will be like, you know, when to use them, when not to use them. The main focus right now, though, has been on two female groups. How does that make it faction heavy? Well, same thing, almost identical to one another, would be Paige and Ruby Riott. Now, granted, Ruby Riott lives in the States, obviously, American-born and bred, correct? Paige, I don't mean to carry on this discussion all the time, but it seems to be like the hot issue or hot-button topic of every single wrestling fan nowadays. Because recently, because the men had their chance at groups, you know, they've got the Wyatt, they had the Wyatt family, which was an amazing, awesome group, which is rumored to get back together during Royal Rumble or sometime next year in 2018, then you have the New Day and the Shield. So, yes, you do have dynamics. Oh, and by the way, if the Four Horsewomen end up getting together, that could spell trouble for a certain group of people. on Raw or SmackDown Live, considering that they can't do that because they are obligated by contract to wrestle for Monday Night. Well, anyways, so Faction Heavy couldn't just be this time period, because, I mean, there was a ton of the group. There was Dungeon of Doom, Oddities, and that was in the 90s. You had the Fabulous Freebirds, the Four Horsemen. There are just plenty of other groups, I'm sure, that I'm unaware of. That, oh yeah, the Heenan family. Bobby, you know, headed by Bobby the Brain Heenan. There's just so many factions right now. The Bullet Club, the Shield, the New Day, the Elite, or the Revival, which somewhat exists, I guess, because Dash Wilder did participate at Starrcade, a non-televised event for WWE. But anyways, back to my point. Action Heavy. There's a lot of that. If you have an entire organization basing your shit off of a faction, how do you work that into effect without looking stupid? That's just my question to you all. How do you as a wrestling organization work with all these factions? Where are you going to put them? Where, how do you, the promoter, make sure that there's something for them to do other than, you know, Rampage or have run-ins with other groups or other people? How do you make it intriguing? How do you get the crowd to react? Well, if you get the crowd to react, isn't that the number one thing that a promoter is looking for? Is, if you got my crowd to react, you did your job as a writer, or you did your job as, you know, a producer or whatever. Sometimes groups can be overused. Sometimes they can be underutilized. What do I mean by this? From a fan's perspective, if a group is overused, like the Authority, for example, it was heavily run, you know, into the ground the umpteenth time. You saw Seth Rollins, Triple H, Stephanie. She was kind of a part of the Authority, but it didn't quite necessarily work out that way. So what we're looking at, ladies and gentlemen, currently speaking in the world of wrestling, is people have this concept of what a faction is and can be. The NWO is a great example of being faction heavy. It doesn't necessarily mean you can have too many groups, but what they spawned in WCW was you had the Latino World Order, the Blue World Order, which, you know, ECW, not WCW, but the NWO spawned off so many factions, Latino World Order, Japan World Order. That's what you call faction heavy and overdoing it. And I must say, after the umpteenth time of seeing a shirt come out with WO on it in the 90s, I didn't really care. I was a kid. I was watching ECW, WWE, and WCW. How? When ECW was closed-circuit television? Eventually, they went on to Sci-Fi or Spike. It didn't quite work out for them, but, I mean, look, even ECW back in the day when they had the Baldies or when they had full-blooded Italians, I mean, or the Super Crazies. ECW also was faction heavy at one point, because why? In order to adapt in wrestling, this is what you hear. You either adapt with the times or you perish. 10 seconds for station identification on Off the Rails Uncensored. So, haven't played this one in a while.
About the reasons that
All right, so, oh yes, and there's one group I forgot to mention in WCW a long time ago called The Flock, and that was headed by Raven. So you had the NWO, you had The Flock, some groups in between that would just, you know, not care because the NWO grew so much that it became faction heavy. Faction heavy can mean too many cooks in the kitchen, meaning, you know, there's too many guys trying to determine what the outcomes are. And they were literally trying out guys for the NWO back in the day because the NWO was a hot button group. Based on this relay of the NWO off of something, yes, I am. You see, back in the day, when there's only WCW versus NWO, that spawned the whole D-Generation X creation by WWE in 1996/97. If you want to get technical, they were the answer to the NWO because they were the other half of the clique. And it wasn't a bad thing because I'll admit, you know, I bought both shirts. I bought the NWO, I bought D-Generation X. But I'm going to get back to my topic at hand, discussing with you all. Faction heavy in wrestling kind of gets annoying because then you have one individual versus the whole entire locker room. And by that, I mean, in some circumstances, when you go to an indie event and there's a group of guys, there may be 2, 3, 4 of them together, might wear pig snouts. They may not wear pig snouts. I mean, I've seen this before. They may wear weird outfits, but they're a group. And this is because their chemistry together with one another is really, really awesome. So they decide to put each other together. I mean, it's like putting a puzzle together. You can't have this if you don't have... You see how odd that sounds? When you have a lot of factions in wrestling, there tends to be a problem. What do I mean by this? Some of it works and some of it doesn't. This isn't the era that had, you know, luxury of having rivalries between the Four Horsemen and Harley Race, or the Four Horsemen and, you know, Magnum TA or whatever was going on. So, I mean, you got to understand the reason why I don't really dabble into this shit is because the Bullet Club, yes, it's a thing. The symbolism behind it is awesome. It's kind of like the modern-day NWO, but better. Why? Because the NWO was a movement. This is also a movement. It doesn't have anything to do with faction heavy. You're right. But what I'm telling you guys is that when wrestling has all these groups, you know, you have a New Day, you have the Shield on one perspective, how is it good that, the, you know, these groups compare and contrast to one another? One, I would say, you know, one likes to have a good time by beating others' asses. The others, okay, New Day likes to have fun, and necessarily they look like the comic relief of the entire section. So, in essence, what you're witnessing is how, you know, wrestling promoters are supposed to handle this all, because you got all this talent. You got Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose on one end. Okay, for Ring of Honor, you've got Marty Scurll, Cody Rhodes, you've got the Young Bucks. You didn't think I'd recognize any Ring of Honor names except the obvious ones? I mean, come on. You had Donovan Dijak come from Ring of Honor. You had all these names. Are they going to join a faction because that's the end thing to do? I don't know. But from what I look at wrestling back then and wrestling now, there's really, I mean, the way things were done, yes, there are subtle differences. How they book these groups, I don't know. And I'm not going to psychoanalyze that. However, you know, it's funny when I say I'm not going to psychoanalyze, and here I am psychoanalyzing the breakdown of the groups in wrestling. I'm also going to talk to you in the next 13 minutes when it gets you off the rails uncensored about how fans, you know, if you want to join your pro wrestling on the other side, how do you work a crowd? That is the question, because you see a crowd and you really want to try what you know in your heart's going to work the best. Some crowds are very, very, you know, okay, if you do something or say something simple, they'll pop for you, right? It's not all about just getting pops. It's about timing with these crowds and also about location. Now, depending upon where you're at, how are you going to engage with the crowd if you're in New Orleans versus if you were in a crowd that was a lot smaller, small town in Kentucky? I don't know. Like, Louisville's not a small town, but let's say you're wrestling at a baseball field in a suburb in Kentucky, and you know you're not a big name. You got to somehow get the crowd growing because the promoter tells you. Well, I'm going to discuss that with you all later on in the show. If you have any questions, you can send your questions the way of Instagram, btrain05000 at Instagram, or wrestle_radio, whichever one you guys prefer to send the message to. So here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. Wrestling groups in, you know, okay, let's say, in the 1960s, did they have any groups? No. In the 1970s, you bet your ass, because the Four Horsemen was born. I'm pretty sure that there are more groups to be included. The Fabulous Freebirds. Oh, the Von Erichs. Okay. So the Von Erichs is another group that I can reference. Now, the Von Erichs and Freebirds, they got into a bunch of fights, you know, and now, comparing those two teams to the Shield and New Day, what's the one similarity between all four of those teams that they have? They have a great rivalry. There's great fuel can add to the fire whenever you watch these two teams go at it. So, in other words, if you want to see what total destruction and chaos looks like, you can go back and watch, you know, some of from the 1980s of the Freebirds, you know, having it out with the Four Horsemen, having it out with the Von Erichs. You want to know where some of the inspiration for DX and Evolution came from? Take one good look at the Fabulous Freebirds, take one good look at the Four Horsemen, and take another good look at the Von Erichs. Combine all those talents, and yes, some people will get upset with me when I say this, but they are some of the attributes that Triple H brought to Evolution was very similar to the Four Horsemen. I'm not saying they are exact, because they had one of the remaining Four Horsemen is still active in wrestling. Of course, you know, Ric Flair, Love and Death, but faction heavy back in WWE, meaning there was La Resistance, there was Evolution. At one point, you know, you had a WCW theme because Evolution kind of represented the NWO, because they were running things, they were running roughshod over WWE, they were controlling the title reigns, they were basically running the company. So, yes, I realize that Triple H is the son-in-law of Vince McMahon. The point is, faction-heavy wrestling can either work, or there's ways that it can. So when I refer to that, I'm not trying to be a complete douche canoe about it. I'm just telling you, you know, it can either work or it can fall on its face. And by being faction-heavy, two female groups is not faction-heavy. If they have, like, 4, 5, 6 female groups, then I might consider that to, you know, phrase it faction heavy. Having too many groups in wrestling is a bad thing, because if they can work against one another and give the fans a show, that's not a bad thing. If they overwork the same angle, by overworking the same angle, meaning, let's say, the New Day attacks the Shield, and the Shield attacks the New Day, and then the New Day attacks the Shield again. And it's called building for something that you might want to save till WrestleMania. However, you know, it's up to the writers how they want to write these groups. So, you know, sometimes the fans may suffer a never-ending saga of having a group go up against one another. So, the Shield versus the New Day, if that were to be run into the ground, you know, you'd hear bitching, you know, you'd hear the blogs start to come out. And I'm not going to change my stance on what, you know, the title says. These things are faction heavy. And it's like, okay, I understand the Shield just reunited. I understand that the Wyatts are about to get back together. Imagine, folks, if we had, you know, six groups at a time running stuff. How is that going to work? How is that going to affect my wrestling fandom? Really isn't. I still will watch pro wrestling despite what people say or do. And whether it's faction heavy or not, my ass is still going to be sitting on the chair watching on my 55-inch flat screen. Or even lower than that, I don't care. Size of the screen don't matter, does it? Or size doesn't matter is what they tell you. Anyways. The question that you have for me is, which faction during the faction-heavy periods were my favorite? Of course, the Four Horsemen. I wasn't even alive for that time period, but Tully Blanchard, J.J. Dillon, Ric Flair, and Arn Anderson. You want to talk about a group that had their way in WCW or NWA, the Four Horsemen. The rivalries that they had with Dusty Rhodes and Kevin Sullivan and all them. I mean, I don't think you can get any better than that. As far as rivalry, you know, the groups that they had back in the day for WWE, I don't know what you would call Cornette's faction. The Million Dollar Corporation was interesting, to say the least. It wasn't. Back in the day, like I said, WWE was struggling for ratings. Hang on 1 second, folks.
Bullet Club 4444.
Alright, ladies and gents, so, in order to give a fair shake to the discussion and also the off-the-rails subject, I decided, you know, why not? I already reviewed SmackDown Live, not going to review it again, so, I guess, by giving it a fair shake, we're going to traipse into this little adventure we call on how to work a wrestling crowd, okay?
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cost of something I would be.
The cult of personality. Oh, well, you want me to sing it? The cult of personality. There. So, again, I've been discussing with you sometimes about how crowds can be and how, you know, you never say certain things to a crowd. Well, here's what I know. If you're working a basic crowd, just say basic things because you never know how they may react, right? You don't know how they take things. What we think in our heads as performers is, oh, you know, this crowd will react this way. Certain guys just have the gift, man. When it comes to getting a crowd to react good or bad, I can name a name that gets seldom used when discussing how to work a crowd. You had a guy that could get a reaction no matter where he went because he's so good at getting insta-heat with the promoter. And sometimes that didn't work out for him, but Brian Pillman. Boy, that name brings back memories now, doesn't it? Former tag team partner, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Former tag team champion of the Hollywood Blonde in WCW. He also worked in ECW, but what is the main component of how you get a crowd to react? What do you do as a wrestler or as a manager to get the crowd going? And what's the main ingredients for getting a crowd to boo you, to hate you, to absolutely fucking want to tear you to ribbons? I'll tell you right now, from experience, you can insult the crowd. You know, say you guys can't read, you can't write, and this is how you guys will always be. Speaking of which, you know, I managed a match against Trevor Murdoch, and that was my one claim to fame, I guess. Worked for another promotion for 2 years, that's a different story, so I'm going to stick with the Trevor Murdoch story. You can look it up, the match on YouTube itself, if you don't believe me. It's Trevor Murdoch versus Livian Nightmare Hassan Payne. It's not a very long match because they start on the outside beating the crap out of each other. And then I managed this guy, so he wasn't there to see the promo, but it was in Larned, Kansas. And I remember working the role of a stereotype that I'm not Middle Eastern, but they had me play the role of a Middle Eastern manager. So, you know, it was my very, very first, you know, big deal because I was part of the main event. I never really expected to be working that day, so I made the mistake of not bringing gimmick. And now I learn, bring your suit, bring your tie, bring whatever they want you to be, because you never know. So long story short, how did I work the crowd that night? I probably gave the worst Middle Eastern accent ever in my life, and how'd I put this? It wasn't too hard to get the crowd in Kansas riled up about being anti-American, which obviously during this time would not be a great idea because I don't want a shotgun barrel down my face. But I guarantee you, that got the crowd going. Yes, I did. Hang on 1 second, ladies and gentlemen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the joys of having eye surgery is you got to put in drops. So anyways, continue the story. Again, not the world with me. What I like to tell you is working that crowd was kind of cool because you get the sense of, oh, man, I got this crowd really going, and I don't know what the hell they're going to do other than boo my ass so far out of the building that makes you feel, you know, gratifying feeling, I gotta say. It makes you feel a sense of, oh, cool, can I do it again? Well, considering my character, Brian Rails, can be versatile, you can use me as a baby face, I can pound the mat and look pretty, or I can basically get in the ring and mouth off, or sound off, which is what my character was built to do. But how do you know that? you don't know until the promoter sees you and says, okay, we want you to work this angle, or we want you to be this character, and this is what your motivation is. They give you a synopsis of what you are and what you can do and what you will be. It's never you telling them what you're going to be doing, unless you show them videotape, as JT Davidson once told me, you know, during an interview with the former host with the most. You see, working a crowd, I mean, one of two things. It's A, it's going to work. B, not so much, because certain crowds will not react to what you say on the mic, but they'll react as soon as the action starts going on. Other crowds are either going to be cranky, they're going to be really fun, they're going to be live, you don't know. Crowd is a crowd. So how do you work a wrestling crowd? Okay, look at Elias Sampson. Elias Sampson, a lot of people don't like because, well, he plays guitar. Oh, he's so annoying. Oh, I put him on mute. Guess what you're doing? You're reacting to what he does. So in other words, he's already accomplished his goal as a worker. Now, the crowd really lays into him whenever he starts the guitar playing and playing songs that are like the opposite of what the crowd wants to be heard. So I think he's a great example of underrated heel, because he just has that nonchalant, arrogant vibe, you know, I can do this better than you, and I'm going to put you in the mat, though, you know, Roman Reigns and him, they did have a decent match. Looked like Elias was in control for most of that match. It kind of shocked people. You know, normally Roman Reigns would probably step all over someone like Elias, but I don't think that was the case. I think they wanted to give the fans a show. So there's a difference between working a crowd in a match and working a crowd on the mic. Some people will boo you the instant that you have the mic in your hand. And some people will cheer you for stating obvious promo facts. There's just a lot of things that go into working a crowd. And when you go out to the curtain, you know, you're discussing with the producers, like, okay, what am I supposed to say? You know, like, how are my facial expressions? When should I, you know, what timing, you know, when should I say this? Because there's a difference between working certain wrestling crowds. Now, granted, PWG is different from ROH. ROH, obviously, is way different than WWE. So where do you fit a promo in? Exactly. How do you fit a promo in? And how is it supposed to make sense? Not just promos, but like, how do you relate to the crowd? Are you a Paul Heyman, you know, that can speak his mind no matter what? Are you a Prince Nana from Ring of Honor? Are you Tommy Dreamer? Do you get emotional when you start on the mic? What I usually tell guys who, you know, venture into wrestling, ask someone who's been in the business a lot longer than me. Because they'll tell you, where do you draw your inspiration from? Oh, and key thing that Uncle Bob normally tells most of his is first-time greeters or first-time meeters, is what I say. Use the quotationary, because you can find any form of inspiration from that book. It's a big old thick book. It's like $2, $3, maybe $5. On eBay, $5 on Amazon, used. Pick it up. Grab you a highlighter. Start, you know, randomized quotes. So you find that you're on a roll and like, man, this is awesome. This is great. I got to use this quote from Albert Einstein. Or I got to use this quote from JFK. Because it fits in with my promo. Using resources to the crowd amped or get a crowd. Some guys just gauge the crowd, period, like Jinder Mahal. Like the Iron Sheik back in the day. Like, no, Michael Hayes back in the day. Certain guys know how to amp a crowd, get to about 11, because some say crowd's already at a 10, so you want to turn that dial up just enough to get them over and on your side. Doesn't matter. And I'm going to confuse people. On your side meaning cheering you as a baby face? Or on your side is meaning really getting irritated with you as a heel. So who's the best example in contrast to that? You have Roman Reigns, who's now, you know, half cheering, half booing his ass. You've got Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, two different personalities. Ambrose is off the wall crazy. Rollins is more of the architect who thinks, you know, build a good foundation for a match, you must first do this, and doesn't really speak much on the mic. But when he does, people pay attention. You've got a hype man, Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman, basically, my name is Paul Heyman. See, from the moment he starts saying that, people start literally hinging on every word that he says after that because they know what he's going to say. And it was funny, he's out in an Atlanta crowd, and I guess someone had proposed, and someone said yes, and Paul Heyman really didn't like the attention being taken away because normally that's his time to shine. So in essence, how do you work a crowd? I can tell you one thing. If you can't talk, you better find someone to talk for you. Or just talk with your actions by beating someone really bad. In other words, do you have to speak to be a good professional wrestler? No. You can have the skill set of a Brock Lesnar. Or you can have a personal advocate talk for you. I've seen guys in past in wrestling who weren't able to talk. I grew up past the fact that none of them wanted me as their manager, except for one who was forced to have me as their manager. And I've read up on some things, you know, like Rude really didn't want Bobby Heenan with him as a manager because it didn't really fit, and I completely agree, because Bobby Heenan, yes, was the ultimate heel back in the day, but he's also comic relief. So how he worked a crowd versus how Paul Heyman works the crowd is not, I mean, Bobby Heenan had some subtleties about him, you know, the comic relief, the genius, the ability to pull the crowd in or reel the crowd in. Whether you loved him or hated him, you know, there's always that one small chance that he's going to make you laugh. And he always, as a child, he made me laugh. I didn't boo him. I really honestly didn't. It's weird. You can even ask my parents. I cheered for Jake the Snake Roberts. Hogan, not so much. I cheered for him, not going to lie, but not as much as I did for Jake the Snake, the Ultimate Warrior, guys that could actually gauge the crowd other than you saying, what you going to do, brother, when Hulkamania runs wild on you? I mean, at the time, yes. Hogan is known for building his, you know, like Babe Ruth built the old Yankee Stadium. But what I, you know, here's my thing, guys and gals. If you look at people who are really good at working the crowd, Sting didn't say a word until 1997 Starrcade, right? The build between him and Hogan, how they worked the crowd then, Sting would appear, he would disrupt the NWO and basically, you know, leave into the night and be in the rafters. So that build was genius. How did he work a crowd if you don't? Mike, that might perplex some people now, because now every Raw episode, it seems, you know, they've got, exactly, they have a 20, almost 25 minute promo to open every show. Now, the only ones to pull it off that length of promo could be Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Elias Samson. I could list off guys that could work a crowd really well. So how do you work? What are the elements in working a crowd? First of all, are you on a microphone? Second of all, you don't have to necessarily pull out a microphone and start chatting, you know, to the crowd. If that's your thing, you might as well be a manager. You might as well just be like, okay, well, I need someone to talk for me in order to get my point across. So that's okay. How do you work a crowd? Gauge the audience from the outside. Look up from behind the curtain. See how they react to certain people. And if you know they're going to start booing you, then work with it. Even if you're supposed to be the ultimate best baby face you can be. Also, there are different types of crowds, obviously. You got your Southern Bells and your Southern crowds that have the IQ of 12. Practically every crowd, some crowds think they don't have the IQ of 12. Well, if you get pulled in by what I'm telling you, it doesn't necessarily lower your IQ points, but it does make my point. If I get you to react, whether I'm a heel, whether I'm a babyface, an announcer who's a heel or a babyface, color commentary, I'm doing what I like to call my job. So, Corey Graves, Jesse the Body Ventura, Gorilla Monsoon, JR, Jerry Lawler, Bobby the Brain Heenan, all those names, they know how to work a crowd. They know how to work with their colleagues. So, I'm going to get to the point. How do you work a crowd when it's absolutely dead and you're trying to get them to get into the match? Some guys know the answer to this question. You can tap your foot on the mat. You can clap. You know, get a clap going in the crowd so that it gives life to the match again. Because otherwise you're going to be sitting on your ass watching from afar. And by that, I mean, you'll be in the crowd wondering, oh, man, I wish I would have gotten the crowd going because promoter got pissed at me when I got to the back. There's certain – make noise when you're doing suplexes. Make sure that you have something to sign autographs with. When you're going down the aisle, you can slap hands or you can say, fuck you. I don't know. I wouldn't say fuck you. I would – you know, if there's little kids there, you got to watch that. But speaking of, like, entrances and how to get people going, how to get people upset, that's easy. If they're a city that is heavily offended by if you mention something bad about their sports teams, like Kansas City, for example, or Iowa or Nebraska or anywhere, like Atlanta, Chicago, Denver, mention their sports teams. It's that easy. You know why? Because I don't know about you, but if someone comes into New York and starts dissing on the Yankees, some people cheer because they're stupid Mets fans, and some people, majority of the audience, boos because they know that it gets them annoyed. So that's one of my tips if you want to get a crowd going the simple way. If you run out of crap to say, keep going, but don't ramble on. You may want to repeat yourself. Look at different crowd. Like, if you're in the ring, go do different angles. And notice Triple H repeats himself. Sometimes. Even Stephanie McMahon will repeat herself. I know that's confusing to some of you, but when you're making a point of emphasis. Next week on Monday Night Raw, I, Brian Rails, the advocate for the enigmatic suplex cyclone, a.k.a. the mayor of the City of Destruction, Kurt Gannon. You know, by making an introduction, I want people to be engaged. I don't want people to fall half fucking asleep. Okay? And also, aside from all what's going on, you know, in wrestling now, how do you get a crowd to react now? What others have done. And you make sure that they're doing what needs to be done. So, you yourself, you got to focus on your own shit. When you're out there for the crowd, if you're by yourself, if you're not with somebody and you don't have time to go over, like, okay, how am I supposed to react? Like, what are my facial, how are my facial expressions? You know, okay, do you think this sounds okay if I say this? Some guys write their own promos. Like, I saw, for example, I saw Big Cass when he was in Kansas City, and he went up to Laurinaitis at the time and said, how are my facial expressions? And do you think I should say this, you know? And Laurinaitis usually goes and discusses things with the guys. I mean, there's different things. There's certain guys that know, okay, if I do this, this is what's going to happen. If I don't do this, this is what's going to happen. They know that by gauging the crowd, they're doing themselves a favor. If they're not gauging the crowd, they're doing themselves a disservice. So if you are a worker and you don't think working the crowd is important, you are sadly mistaken, my friends. Because working that crowd is the biggest, most number one important thing you could ever do, in my opinion, as a performer. Now, wrestling, yes, that's also number one. If you're a wrestler, if I'm speaking to managers, here's what I'm going to tell you. JC Davidson is all correct. Cool. So here's what I got to say. When you're working a crowd, pay attention to where your eye contact is, level-wise. Are you engaging the crowd by looking down at the ring? No. So you want to look up, not at the camera, unless you're making a valid point and you're taking your promo home. And though this sounds like promo advice 101, this is different things that I've got bits and pieces from different seminars that I've been to. Okay, so I'm just taking things into account. Like, I'm pretty sure they're rolling their eyes saying, Jesus Christ, this guy doesn't know a thing that he's talking about. I remember I had to go out and do a 10-minute promo, and I didn't have any basis of what I was doing it on. So that kind of got annoying, having to put up with, okay, I don't have a clue on what I'm doing. So I'll just ramble for, you know, 10 minutes straight. That part, when you have no direction, gets annoying. How? How does it get annoying? If you have to ad lib in the middle of a show, right? And you go out there, you say you got 11 minutes. Some guys have the gift of gab. I do. But when I don't have any direction, kind of really just sets really bad with me. Leaves a bad taste in my mouth because I know I could have done better that night. As far as getting a crowd to react, it's all up to you. It is all up to you. if you know for the simple fact that the crowd just absolutely loves you, wants to send you hugs and kisses, great, you've managed to become the baby face of the century, right? If they absolutely hate you, they want to throw you out the building head first, then you've done your job as a heel. And in conclusion to this whole entire segment, working a crowd is highly important as a performer, because if you're a wrestler and you don't know how to work a crowd, the East Coast is an easy region to work. Why? Because if you stick to your guns and you stick to your character, sure, I don't care so the fuck what if they know all the terminologies. You did your job. Got to gauge that crowd, and if you gauge them the wrong way, they'll let you know. Midwest, it's like pulling teeth. There's certain parts in the Midwest I would love to enjoy working, and that'd be St. Louis, Chicago, sometimes Iowa. But on that note, ladies and gents, I got to go because, well, time to put in more eye drops and time to enjoy, well, NXT. So thank you for joining me on Off the Rails Uncensored. I got to go. My eyeball's killing me. Toodles, bitches. Hope to see you next Tuesday at our scheduled time, 5-4 Central. Well, 5 Eastern, 4 Central. Have a nice day, night, whatever. Bye, bitches. Look in my eyes. What do you see? The cost of something I would be. The cult of personality.